Hello, I'm Rachel Marshall, editor at the Cochrane Editorial Unit. Welcome to the August 2011 monthly roundup from the Cochrane Library. The issue includes 34 updated reviews and 19 new reviews, three of which are featured in this roundup. These reviews examine music therapy in people with cancer, aspirin for in vitro fertilisation, and psychosocial interventions for premature ejaculation. Also on the Cochrane Library is the August editorial by Philip Alderson and Tony Tan from the Centre for Clinical Practice at the National Institute for Health and Clinical Excellence, NICE, in the UK. They describe their assessment of the impact of Cochrane reviews on NICE clinical guidelines and discuss ways in which the Cochrane collaboration and NICE could work together more effectively for mutual benefit. The August issue of the Library also includes a new special collection of evidence on care homes for older people. It includes 8 reviews on topics such as care home staffing, improving quality of life of older people living in care homes, and infection control. The collection was created in collaboration with David Stott and Camilla Young from the Cochrane Healthcare of Older People field in response to several high-profile media stories of problems in the care home sector. And now to our featured reviews. The first review contributes to the latest in a programme of research on music therapy and looks at the effects in people with cancer. Joke Bratt from the Drexel University in Philadelphia, USA, describes the work she has done with colleagues in the USA, Australia and India. This review will also be the subject of the Cochrane Journal Club in September 2011, and you'll be able to access that at www.cochranejournalclub.com.
Having cancer may result in intense emotional, physical and social distress. Many symptoms and treatment side effects impact on the person's physical well-being and quality of life. In addition, cancer patients often experience grief and depression in response to diagnosis and treatment. It is important that their care incorporate services that help address symptoms and meet their psychological, social, and spiritual needs. Music therapy has been used in different medical fields to meet such needs, and we have now examined its effects in cancer, finding that the existing evidence supports music interventions as a complementary treatment for people with cancer. Our Cochrane review includes 30 trials with a total of nearly 2,000 participants with cancer. 9 trials included patients who underwent chemotherapy or radiation therapy. 8 trials examined the effects of music during surgery or other procedures, and 13 trials included general cancer patients. 4 trials examined music interventions for children with cancer. We categorized 17 studies as music medicine studies, in which the patient simply listens to pre-recorded music that is offered by a medical professional. The other 13 studies were music therapy studies. Interventions in music therapy studies are not limited to music listening for relaxation. Music therapists are specially trained to select music interventions to offer emotional and spiritual support, enhance sense of control, and improve physical well-being. Therapists may improvise music with the patients, help them sing familiar and preferred songs, write original songs, or play live music selected by the patients themselves. The results of the existing research suggest that music therapy and music medicine interventions may have a beneficial effect on anxiety. These anxiety-reducing results are consistent with the findings of our 2 earlier Cochrane reviews on the use of music with coronary heart disease patients and with mechanically ventilated patients. The cancer results also indicate that music interventions have a moderate pain-reducing effect. Reduction of anxiety and pain are important outcomes for cancer patients because of the impact of both on the patient's health and overall quality of life. Furthermore, our review suggests that music interventions may have a beneficial effect on heart rate, respiratory rate, and blood pressure. Although these reductions were small, they correspond with the anxiety-reducing effects found by subjective outcomes measures in this review. The results also indicate that music interventions may help improve mood and have a large effect on quality of life in cancer patients, but we did not find any support for an effect on depression, fatigue, or physical status. Some of the other outcomes that we were interested in couldn't be investigated because the results of the studies that included these outcomes could not be pooled, or we found just one eligible trial. These outcomes included distress, body image, mean arterial pressure, oxygen saturation level, immunologic functioning, spirituality, and communication behaviors. We hope that these will be considered more widely in future research. We also have several other recommendations for future randomized trials, which continue to be needed to determine the effectiveness of music medicine versus music therapy, and to examine the relationship between frequency and duration of music interventions and treatment effects. Future trials that use listening to pre-recorded music should report greater detail on the music selections made available to participants and be careful to ensure that the chosen music reflects the patient's true preferences. In addition, researchers need to carefully consider the potential negative impact of the use of headphones during procedures because of hampered communication between the patient and medical personnel. We would also like to see more studies that focus on the use of music interventions in pediatric patients with cancer.
Our second featured review looks at aspirin, a drug with a growing reputation as a treatment for many conditions. Aris Erisetidis from the Attikon University Hospital in Athens, Greece, has led the update of a Cochrane review examining its use for in vitro fertilization.
Aspirin is known to reduce fever, pain, and inflammation, but it has side effects such as bleeding from the digestive tract. It has also been used to treat or prevent cardiovascular and Alzheimer's diseases and some cancers. Within the field of reproductive medicine, aspirin has been used to increase the weight of newborns in pregnant women with fetal growth retardation and to improve placental and fetal blood flow in women with preeclampsia. For women who suffer from recurrent miscarriage, it's prescribed to those who have the antiphospholipid antibody syndrome. In vitro fertilization, or IVF, some of the benefits suggested for aspirin include improvement in uterine and ovarian blood flow and prevention of thrombosis in the placental vessels, together with the production of proteins associated with pregnancy success. However, its preconceptual use has been associated with increased miscarriage rates. This Cochrane review examines the evidence and fills an important gap in the literature relating to the time to start and stop aspirin and how long to use it for. The previous version of the review was published in 2007 with data from 7 trials and about 1,500 participants. The authors concluded that the use of low-dose aspirin for women undergoing IVF could not be recommended due to the lack of adequate trial data at that time. In the subsequent years, more trials have appeared in the literature, and we decided it was time to update the review to incorporate the new evidence, and because the role of aspirin in women with infertility was still controversial. We added another 6 trials, including more than 2,600 participants. Most of the studies that met the criteria for inclusion in the review used a dose of 100 mg aspirin per day, starting at the beginning of the IVF cycle, but the duration of treatment varied from study to study. We were particularly interested in the effects on live birth rates, but these were reported in only 3 studies involving 1,000 women. No significant difference was found between women who took aspirin and those who did not. There was more data on clinical pregnancy, coming from 2,100 women in 10 studies, but aspirin did not improve this either. There was also a lack of evidence of an effect of aspirin on multiple pregnancy, ectopic pregnancies, and miscarriage rates, although these analyses were based on data from a small number of studies. We also studied complications with the IVF procedure, the gestational age of the baby at birth, and complications during pregnancy or birth. No single outcome measure demonstrated a benefit from the use of aspirin. In summary, the large increase in the amount of randomized evidence in the Cochrane review has not allowed us to change the conclusion from the earlier version. Based on the existing evidence, the use of aspirin for a general IVF population cannot be recommended as a means for improving pregnancy rates. One of our disappointing findings is that so few studies reporting on live birth rate, which we consider the most important outcome measure. We hope that researchers in reproductive medicine will use our review to improve the design of future trials and that these will be adequately powered to assess live birth rate. We believe that this is feasible. Using the data from one of the studies, we have estimated that detecting a 10% improvement in the number of live births from the use of aspirin would require a sample size of 350 women per group. This is not difficult to find, and until such studies are done, this treatment cannot be recommended for routine use. The need to resolve this uncertainty is urgent. Couples undergoing IVF often feel so desperate that they are prepared to try anything that may improve their chances of conceiving. If there is real evidence that aspirin could improve a woman's chances of having a baby at home, this has to be documented properly and quickly.
Our final review this month examines the effects of psychosocial interventions for men who experience premature ejaculation, which was prepared by researchers in Brazil and the USA. Tamara Melnick from the Brazilian Cochrane Center in Sao Paulo describes their findings.
Premature ejaculation is a common problem, which can decrease sexual self-confidence, create difficulties in relationships, and have a negative impact on quality of life. Treatment usually involves some form of medication, but the psychological aspects of the condition are also important and need to be addressed, especially when trying to ensure success and maintenance of results. We were aware of the controversial results of existing studies of the effect of psychosocial intervention for the treatment of premature ejaculation, and did this Cochrane review to try to find and summarize all the relevant research. We searched a range of databases and found many published studies, but we were surprised by the quality of the research. Many of the studies were of low quality, and in fact, only 40 studies were good enough to be included in the review. These four randomized trials included 253 male participants and 36 couples. Three trials compared psychotherapy techniques against a pharmacological intervention, and one compared psychotherapy either with a waiting list or functional sexological treatment. Overall, the studies we found provide weak and inconsistent evidence regarding the effectiveness of psychological intervention for the treatment of premature ejaculation. It is difficult to draw clear conclusion on the implication for practice. Instead, we hope that our review will stimulate further research and raise the interest of both mental health clinicians and physicians in this topic. There is an urgent need for more high-quality studies, ideally randomized trials with large number of participants. Given the heterogeneity of patients with premature ejaculation, the research also needs to assess the effects of intervention in specific subgroups, such men who have suffered since adolescence and those who do not respond to the usual medications. The trials should measure important outcome, which has not been studied enough up to now, including sexual confidence, stage of motivation, sexual satisfaction, readiness to change, intimacy, patient and partner satisfaction, anxiety and depressive feelings. Our findings are relevant to psychiatrists, psychologists, urologists, and men in general. Family physicians could also benefit from reading the review, since they are often the first healthcare professionals to deal with men experiencing premature ejaculation.
You can read all the featured Cochrane reviews and the other new and updated Cochrane reviews in the August issue at www.thecochranelibrary.com. I hope you've enjoyed the podcasts, and thank you for listening to this August roundup of the Cochrane Library.